the achievement of all our students. I have done in one school what she is attempting to do and work with in all schools, and I would like to be re-elected to support and work with her in her task of bringing up the achievement of all Rock Hill students.
Steve Nina.
Hi, I'm Steve DiNino, and I'm running for board seat 4. Thanks for Winthrop for hosting this forum tonight, and thank you for having me here. You might already know me as the parent with 5 kids in the Rock Hill school system. And believe me, I've heard all the witty comebacks, bless your heart, you must be Catholic, Brady Bunch comparisons, etc. But what hasn't gotten a lot of attention so far is my technology career. I'm not just the guy who fixes iPads. I'm a software automation engineer. That means I write software to test other software. I think this is relevant because, like our education process, much of my job consists of developing and measuring criteria. I've been a successful director of operations for software development companies. I've overseen multi-million dollar data center buildouts, staffed QA departments, and even led Sarbanes-Oxley remediation projects. I've had a varied and interesting 30-year run in the software industry. I can offer my industry experience, my work ethic, and my passion for my kids to the board. I look forward to your vote, and thank you.
Of Jenny Mo.
Hello, and thank you to Dr. Holder and the West Forum for having us, and to y'all for being here. We appreciate your interest. I've been on the board 4 years, one term. When I ran, I had been attending everything that was public and open for about 3 years, and then my representative did not run. And I've been publishing a blog on finance because that's what I was interested in, the loss of revenue to the schools. I was worried about what would be cut. In addition to that, I've been working on communications. I feel that I've done a pretty good job of that. Our board 2 years ago set some goals of academic to teacher training and communications. And I'd like to stay with our superintendent who we hired, who is interested in those goals too, and continue to work on those issues.
Thank you. Helena Miller.
Yes, my name is Helena Miller. I am running for seat 2. I'm originally from Sweden, hence the accent. I came here as an exchange student. I became a U.S. citizen in 2006. I have a bachelor's degree in communication and a background in real estate. I've been a stay-at-home mom since my husband and I moved to Rock Hill in 2003. I currently have 3 children. They're all in Rock Hill schools. I am, as I said, a stay-at-home mom, but I'm also the PTA president and the SIC chair at my children's school. I serve on the Rock Hill Schools Education Foundation with projects like Back the Pack in IROC. I've spent the last 11 years in this community working to make it a better place for the kids, and I am running for school board because we need parent representation.
Thank you. Jim Vining.
I hope you can tell from my accent where I'm from. I'm running for the relations and at-large seat, and I want to thank Winthrop for having the forum and for all y'all attending and for the candidates offering themselves for service. You hear a lot of things tonight. I hope you pay attention to the specifics. If a candidate says they can cure the common cold, I hope you find out how they're going to do it. I want to echo what's already been said. 2 years ago, we set academic achievement as the top priority on the board. And today we have a superintendent in place who's working on that, who's got goals in all the elementary schools, and I'd like your support to continue that. Thank you.
Thank you. Sarah Harper.
Good evening. I'm happy that you all are here tonight, and I'm from the South, too, so you can recognize my accent also. I have been an educator and in education for almost 30 years. I am retired. I am an educator still, even though I am retired. I have served in the classroom as a classroom teacher. I have served at the district level as the supervisor of guidance counselors, and I've also worked as a guidance counselor in a high school. During that time, I counseled students who were at-risk students and students who were academically talented. So I was able to see both sides of the coin of the students that we educate. I also have served as the executive director of the Exceptional Student Education Department at the district level. In that position, I was able to work with parents and with students and with the state and with program to make sure that everything that we did was in alignment with what the state would require and federal regulations. During my period of time in education, I had a wonderful experience, and I hope you'll give me the opportunity to serve.
Thank you. Rick Lee.
I think the last one was easy to guess. My name is Rick Lee. My wife of 31 years, Kim, is in attendance with me tonight. She's a Winthrop graduate and a teacher in Fort Mill. We have four children and a grandchild due in April, my first. As a Winthrop political science graduate and founding member of the chapter of Pi Sigma Alpha, I tell you, it's great for me to be here. With 25 years of public service, including the York County Council, Sullivan PTO, and Board of Visitors memberships at Winthrop and Columbia College, my experience will help the school board prepare a vision for the future. In my work and career, I have managed business operations with up to 900 employees in the United States and overseas in operations, finance, and strategic planning. These are all skills which I believe will aid the school board. My goal is to bring new ideas, innovation, and community leadership to the school board. Running for school board will allow me to pay back the debt of gratitude I owe to the district for the fine educations my children received. I want to support the school board as we tackle the problems of organizational clarity, SAT scores, and other educational challenges facing us today. Thank you.
Thank you to all the candidates. And let's welcome all of you. Right into the questions now. Question one relates to Common Core standards, and we're going to start. Sarah Harper will be the first to answer this question, and we'll move to her left afterwards. You'll each have 1 minute.
Thank you.
What is your opinion regarding the legislature's decision to withdraw from the Common Core standards here in South Carolina beginning in 2015?
Common Core, as you know, is a set of standards that has been developed on the national level. It's one that allows for students to, it was initiated to allow students, if they moved from Rock Hill to California and they were in the second grade, when they got there, they'd be studying the same thing across states. South Carolina has chosen to withdraw from Common Core Initiative. However, they do have a panel of people who are meeting even now to flesh out the standards that we have in South Carolina. It's critical that our teachers know, have valid standards when they are beginning to teach our students. They need to know exactly what the goal will be at the end of that course of study, and they'll have to have state standards to help guide them.
Thank you. Rick?
Thank you. Common Core is a hot topic at the doors. I've been to about 4,000 doors or more going door-to-door in this campaign, and many people have expressed opinions both for and against it. It was adopted in 2010. It has been part of South Carolina's standards for several years. This is the first year under which we've operated. I'm very relieved that it will be gone next year. I hope that the state of South Carolina and the folks in Columbia can write standards that the public will buy into and that will deliver the goal of a standard approach, at least within the confines of South Carolina, so that a child who moves from Columbia, who's in the third grade, and comes to Rock Hill, will be put into a third grade class where they'll have the same sets of standards that the second teacher is teaching to, and they won't have to go through the problems that we've all seen of children going into areas and finding they're either well ahead or well behind what's in the schools. So I look forward to the new set of standards. I'm glad that Common Core is not something I will have to wrestle with, and I'm glad that it's gone.
Okay, Steve, do you?
Thanks. Well, first off, let me say that I personally have had to deal with Common Core this year with three elementary school kids having to deal with it. I'm opposed to it. I'm glad that we've withdrawn from it. My big fear is that what we're going to get is a repackaging and rebranding of the same standards under a different name. So, my opposition will not dissipate when we get the new standards. I'm very concerned about what we're actually going to get. So I'm hopeful that we can get some good people in there who can come up with a
a set of standards that will actually reflect the wishes of the parents. The reason it's being withdrawn from is because the parental backlash is so fierce. I count myself among them, so thank you.
Jane Sharp?
It's important to say, first of all, that Common Core is not part of the board's area of authority. The Common Core falls in instruction, and that is the duty of the superintendent. And the school board did not vote for or against Common Core because it was not a right to. What we did do was to agree for the funding over the past 4 years, which has been required because the South Carolina adopted it in 2010 to train our teachers to be ready for this. Initially, I was for it because I had students who had moved to Charlotte and back here and to Charlotte and back, and it seemed to me that to have common standards across state lines would be good. But then the government and the entrepreneurs got involved, and I am no longer really sorry that it's gone. What I am concerned now is that the standards, the knowledge and skills that we're going to teach our students will be rigorous, will be challenging, so that our students will be competitive wherever they end up as adults.
Jim Vining?
We'll implement whatever standards the state has, and whether it's Common Core or something else. But I think what Mr. Lee said, the reason that it's important for all the schools in this district to have the same standards and all the schools in the state is because of mobility. And we can say the Common Core was bad, but you have to realize it's in the national interest for the mobile society. Where if you're in Tennessee and you move to South Carolina in the middle of the year, that the kids are not a grade level ahead or grade level behind, and we can agree to disagree. But standards, we've had standards for a long time, and we need to have the discussion about how important it is to the economy of South Carolina to be sure that we have a standard in place that's consistent where people feel willing to move their businesses here and move here to live.
Okay, thank you. Elena Miller?
Yes, I'm too excited to see that it is being worked in the state. I think we need to focus on what is going to happen with the assessment. I'm interested to see how we are going to go forward with testing. One of my main concerns as a parent with Common Core was the amount of testing, especially when we're dealing with young kids. It is exceptionally stressful for the lower elementary grades. And I think we also need to focus on how hard this transition has been on the children, or on the teachers. I am also concerned about all the resources that have been wasted in preparation for something that didn't take place. But yes, I'm glad to see that it's gone.
Okay, Jenny Moe?
Hi, I'm a former business owner, and when I employed high school graduates, it was just a mystery what they knew. So, some of them would be great at math, but couldn't alphabetize anything, and vice versa. I was initially very much in favor of Common Core. I know that our kids are not staying in Rock Hill. They're going to another state, and I'm about sick of people telling us our graduation rate is the same as a state that has only half as many requirements to graduate. So the idea of a national measurement would actually help us. However, the implementation has been so poor, the parents have not been involved, that it's been very difficult to get teacher training, that I'm kind of glad they slowed it down. And I think our state will come up with some good standards as they have in the past.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, question two, and Steve DeNino will be the first one to answer this. The question's a little long, but bear with me a little bit. Okay, so for the past several years, some Rock Hill schools have been open to students outside of the traditional zone via the school choice program. Some of these programs, especially the language immersion programs, have been extremely popular. Some of the choice schools are either at capacity or very near capacity at this time, and it appears that there is a possibility that out-of-zone students may be limited in the future. How do you think the district should adjust to the growing popularity of choice schools and more significantly, the demand for language immersion programs?
My kids are, I'd point out, first of all, my kids are actually in one of those schools. Our three are in Rosewood Elementary, and it's currently at about 105% of capacity. There's a reason it's popular. Parents want their kids in the schools that are succeeding and that are teaching their kids the skills and what they need to succeed in life. And I guess where I'd go with this is that if parents are flocking to these schools and filling them up and they're over capacity, what we need to do is respond to the demands of the community and expand those schools of choice so that there are more schools open to accommodate those parents. I know my kids have benefited from that immensely, and I'd like to see other parents be able to benefit from that as well.
Okay, Jane Sharp.
It's interesting to have this question because the board is even now beginning to deal with the issue of the zoning of our schools. What is an equitable school? What do we need to have to maintain equitable schools? What do we do about, Mr. Tonino said, schools of choice that are full? It's a much more complicated question than just to say, open up another choice school. I think it's a question that we need to involve representatives from our community, representatives from our businesses, and to have some conversations about what we want for our district-wide schools here in Rock Hill. It's certainly a question that the board is going to be dealing with and seeking more information on in the time to come. Of course, we want to offer the choices to our students, but we also want to make sure the resources and support that we can give to those schools. Ideally, if they're called choice schools, we would be offering buses to all of them so that we can make sure they're truly choice schools. We cannot do that, but could make them as equitable as possible.
Jim Money?
I agree a lot with what's been said. Obviously, one of the options we'll be looking at is expanding the program. And it's a good problem to have when you have a choice that's popular. And that's a good problem and one you like to deal with. Expanding is one of the options, bringing trailers into the existing schools. But the important thing is we need to get input from the schools themselves to see what their options they want to use. And we talked about this at the last meeting, and we're looking at a 12 to 18 month process of getting input and looking at the different options before we come to a final decision.
Elena Miller?
Yes, I think there's two parts to this question. The first one is, in order to improve our graduation, we keep kids interested and engaged in learning. We all know that children learn very differently, and choice schools kind of home in on that, to where children can potentially attend a school that may be more focused on their specific version of learning, so to speak. But number two is also that we're facing a situation now where we have close to 2,000, I would guess, students that are actually signed for Rock Hill Schools that choose not to go to Rock Hill Schools. And I think offering some more choices would be a good way for the district to be able to keep these kids in the public school system and maybe be able to compete with things like charter schools and private schools in the area.
Okay,
we did discuss this at the meeting Monday night, and my own feeling is that zoning's a little irrelevant nowadays. In many parts of the world and in many parts of the U.S., every school is a choice school. I'm including middle schools and high schools, and I think that would be the way to go. There are ways you can put limits on attendance and who attends to so that it doesn't get too far out of balance. I think that all of us know we have to make choices in life. When you go to one school, you may have to give up something, but that school may have something you really want. And I think that would be the problem with that. I think that would be the way to go. But the problem with that, of course, is transportation. That's a tough nut to crack.
Okay, Sarah Harper.
Rock Hill is so fortunate to have schools of choice available for our students. And tonight, when we were meeting earlier, we had a testimony to that effect, as one of the parents shared with us the importance of the Sunset Park and the Center for Accelerated Learning at that school, and the success of her student and the difference in the learning ability of that child when he was immersed in that program. But at the same time, when we look at facilities and the impact that these kinds of schools of choice can have on facilities, the cost, the startup cost for a school of choice can be monumental. And as you know already, we have a funding issue in our district. I think before we move forward with any more schools of choice, which I'm for schools of choice, don't get me wrong, I'm for schools of choice, but I think we need to take a step back and say, how do we plan appropriately for schools of choice in location of those schools? For instance, Ebonport and Richmond Drive are both Spanish immersion schools, and they're very close to each other. So maybe we need to look more at location of those schools and spread them out further on the district.
Thank you. I think those of you who study business will know from your studies that there's a practical limit to the numbers of innovations or initiatives that any organization can put forward at a single time. So when it comes to expanding the schools of choice, and I also have been very impressed with the schools of choice and agree with it, we have to make sure that we don't exceed the capacity to manage the 17,000 students that we have and ensure that each student has a quality education covering all the basics. There are financial limits to what you can do with schools of choice. The transportation issues are quite severe. I think it's important that schools in neighborhoods that become schools of choice, that local students in those areas have first opportunity to attend. Whenever you have an initiative such as a school of choice and it has a specific topic that's it's going to be a specialist in, you've got to remember there's a strategic plan that follows with that, in that if it's an elementary school, you've got to have a plan in the middle schools and the high schools to carry forward all the things they've learned in elementary school, or else you run the risk of losing the benefits of that learning.
Very good, thank you. Okay, on to question three. Completely different topic, and Rickley, you actually start this one for us. So this is about the IROC initiative. Currently, Rock Hill students in grades 4 through 8 and ninth graders at South Point High School receive an iPad via the IROC program. The original plan called students. The district, however, has decided against issuing laptops to students for now due to budgetary concerns. The question is, how do you envision the future of the IROC program in the district?
You know, the march of technology in our lives, in our workplaces, and in the school is something that has been moving forward for many, many years, and it's not going to change. It's moving forward. I can recall the days when we had arguments about laptops and about hand calculators. Today we argue about iPads. I believe in the program. I believe it should move forward. I would have voted this year for it to continue, but I think there are issues we need to deal with regards to both the students and how they use them, and with the parents and how they perceive they're used. It's important, I think, for us to make certain that our parents understand that the instruments, the iPads, are not used continuously all day, that there's supervision in what the students use them for, and then we should make certain that our teachers, who for some this is new technology, are thoroughly trained in how to use them and to make certain they get the most benefit out of them. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve and Nina.
I think about this question in terms of looking at what Amazon has done to the publishing industry and the upheaval that's gone on with the music industry about 15 years ago, where the cost of duplicating a particular item has dropped to basically zero. We've got iPads distributed amongst these grades right now, but as far as I know, we're still paying about the same amount of money for a textbook, even though the cost of replication is nothing. It seems to me that we could be, you know, pushing for savings here and utilizing the technology for what it was originally designed for, which was a content delivery tool. The iPad is nothing more than that. It's a tool. And I think Rick actually hit something that I wanted to say. He said the parents' perception of it. I'm sorry, I just saw the red card. totally lost my train of thought. It clearly articulating the problem that you're trying to solve with those iPads to the parents would be a great benefit to the program.
Okay, thank you. Jane Sharp.
Hi,
Our use of technology has to grow as an effective supplement to instruction. It cannot supplant the teacher. It has to support that. When the original proposal came to the board, we asked several questions. Have teachers, have parents, have our community been involved in this decision? Have we considered multiple platforms in terms of fiscal responsibility? What plans are in place to prepare our teachers? How will we gather evidence as to their effectiveness? We did not vote to expand the program this year because the plan that was presented to us would require us to spend 5 years paying for machines, for implements that would only last for 3. We will be expanding the use of our program, but it is a support tool for our teachers and to be used within the curriculum and the learning goals of the teacher in our district. It is not a panacea without that.
Thank you. Jim Biney?
Yeah, I'll try to be brief. The program was implemented based on the criteria that it wouldn't raise taxes, that if we had a bond, the bond wouldn't exceed the device, and that we'd show academic improvement. And the administration set a target of meeting or exceeding the national average for MAP scores as the criteria to know that when we're ready to move that. Those are the criteria. They haven't checked the standard that administration set. So we're trying to hold the district accountable to move forward, is what I think a lot of people have said. And I'll make no apology for not going forward. That's the way it was set up, and we stuck to our guns.
Okay, Pauline.
Yes. I believe that IROC is the solution to closing the socioeconomic gaps that our district is facing, especially on a high school level. We have heard words from teachers and students alike in high school that more of a laptop-type device is what's needed. Not moving forward was a mistake. I do believe that what we should have done is thought outside of the box and found some creative ways to make this happen. If you look at districts nationwide, there's a lot of different grant opportunities and more specifically lease-back options that are available. And my question as a parent is, why are we not looking into this? Let's be creative and make this happen. Right now, Rock Hill Schools is actually the lowest performing district in our county, and I believe that this would be a good way for us to kind of close that gap as well.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm going to have to disagree a little bit. I voted against that. There are 5 things I think need to be in place before we expand iPad. One is I think we need more adequate teacher training. Some teachers are going great guns, but we still get teachers that say, I don't know what to do with it. We need a financially sustainable plan. I think that limiting our students to one device is really, I think it's irresponsible. They have to know them all when they get out. I think there are many ways to learn that. We have to have some measurable goals, which, as Mr. Vining said, hadn't been met. And we have to have a way to figure out equity. Even though most kids have a phone, you ever tried to do your, I was trying to look up something today online. We need to have some kind of equity in provision of the devices before I'll feel comfortable voting for it.
Sarah,
also, our first thing is to be academic, so that's, it's just a tool, as somebody said.
I'm not going to need 2 microphones.
I don't try so much, Sam. I would like to, but you know, they might cut me off in a minute here.
Technology, as you know, our district has made a considerable investment in technology already for our students in terms of devices for grades 4 through 8. Although the board has not approved any monies in this year's budget, I believe that this is probably a good time for us to stop and take stock of where we're headed with devices and with that type of material and media for our students. Certainly, they all are very capable of accessing the internet, of accessing many kinds of resources, and they are wonderful resources for them to access for projects and other kinds of activities in the classroom. But I think we might need to stop and consider which platform we're going to go with as a district before we move forward with any other devices, knowing that we have to provide something in the future for our students to enhance the learning of our students.
Thank you guys very much. Okay, I'm going to ask a question that I got from the audience here. This relates to sports, actually. So 4A sports is a big deal in South Carolina. How do you justify currently having 2 4A high schools and 1 3A? How does this affect property values? What is your plan to make this more equal going forward? And we will start with Helena Noy.
That is a, it's a difficult question to answer because we need to be very clear in that rezoning and things like that should only really be happening if it's a question of racial diversity issues, so to speak. I think I'm a big promoter in sports and schools. I think they do improve our graduation rates as well as keep some school spirit for the kids. As far as the differences, I'm going to be brutally honest. I don't know enough about the specifics to give a clear answer on how to solve it, but I would love to research it.
Okay, thank you. Jenny Moe?
This is exactly why I think we need some schools of choice at the high school level and feeder schools. One of the questions I asked when they started the immersion schools was, what's the plan for the middle school? We now have schools that don't really feed into each other that have the largest IB programs, and at the high school level, we have some smaller classes in more advanced, or we have kids going across town, and I think there are ways to get around that. It is a difficult problem. The city was supposed to grow towards South Point, and it didn't. And so now we've got this problem, but I think there are ways to solve that if we work on feeder programs, if we work on scheduling, if we work on just where people go to school and why they would go there, school choice.
Sarah Harper.
Jenny keeps wanting me to use her microphone.
Sharing.
I was not, of course, in the district when the new high school started, and I'm not sure the rationale for having that high school start, but I do love sports, as my husband can attest and many of you know. I think the competitiveness between our schools, our high schools, is thing. I think that it creates a great spirit within our city. Now, saying that, having said that, I do know that the replication of resources in three high schools is very costly, and I think it might be wise for us to take a look at that and maybe see if we can create some schools that would be schools of choice at the high school level and maybe equalize in some way the offerings that are made.
Hey, Rickley.
Thank you. I'm a very big supporter of athletics. I enjoy tennis. My sons participated in sports in the schools. The value of sports is significant in the education of our children. I don't know of many events that the school district has that can draw 10,000 people as they do for football games on Friday nights. So it holds a special place in the community. The one subject that was raised had to do with the school locations. I think it's critical for us going forward to make certain that when we put a school in a location that we don't have the type of problem that's developed now where we have a school that doesn't have nearly as many students as two of the other high schools. That's a long-term plan, and when those decisions are made, it's imperative that those considerations be made about future populations. At this point, I don't believe in redistricting because of sports. That was an argument that has been used in the past for some schools. I do believe in redistricting to match up with the academics.
Thank you. Steve Danina.
Well, I've certainly had my share of kids in sports programs in school, and I've always enjoyed watching them participate, but as far as the specific question goes, I'd want to know how we got into a situation where we've got a disparity between the schools in the first place. And as far as getting out of it, I really couldn't tell you at this point. That's a question that I'd need to do a lot more research on before I could answer coherently. So.
Okay, Jane Sharp.
I think this questioning is in a way part and parcel of the question that has to do with the schools of choice. I notice as I'm walking and knocking on doors how sometimes I will find within a single neighborhood children who go to Northwestern, two doors down, there's someone who goes to one of the other high schools. That's part of what we're beginning to look at, is that the whole question of, are we saying we're going to rezone? No, not at all. But we are looking at the lack of consistency among some of the way we apply feeder schools, as Jenny said. Certainly we can't discount the importance of our sports programs in our school. I spent a lot of Thursday and Friday nights as an elementary principal jumping up and down and cheering on the small fries and the younger students in gray-wise who were playing football. And it certainly opens opportunities and engages students in our schools as nothing else does. But I think the other question is not one we can give a snap answer to. We need to work harder on it.
Thank you, Giovanni.
Yeah, that's an ongoing discussion, and I know the people at the affected school, at least in athletics, are concerned. I think the board has a responsibility to make sure that size does not affect the opportunities that student athletes have in any of the schools, and certainly that's something that the board is responsible for. I think the flip side is a smaller school has more opportunities for kids that wouldn't be able to play at a bigger school. They have more opportunities to play. So there's positives and negatives. But our focus should be on the having access to the same programs, and that includes academics. We need to be sure that the academics are there. One of the things that we need to talk about on this issue is, should that high school be made a choice school and have a program there that encourages more people to go there to get the student numbers up?
Okay, thank you. Okay, on to question number 4, and Jenny Moe will start this off for us. This is related to charter schools. So currently, charter schools in South Carolina are funded at lower levels than traditional public schools. What, if any, changes should be made to the way in which charter schools are funded? Also, how do you see charter schools fitting into the greater public education system?
Well, all charter schools are different, so it's hard to assess them. However, most studies say that 19% of them do better than zone public schools, 37% do worse. The others are split about even. If you just flip in a coin, you know, you go to a public school. But you're not just flipping a coin. Accountability is different. Demographics are different, even though they're supposed to be the same. There's just no way to judge. The two things I would like to see, there are three things I'd like to see. The first one would be that they actually do have the demographics that zone schools have, that they actually do, are just as accountable, have to make sure that they do all the things public schools have, that they elect their school boards the way we're elected instead of choosing for their parents. And thirdly, I really think that the best thing would be if charter schools were part of the local school board with the elected school board.
Robert?
In some circumstances, I think a charter school is very appropriate, such as the Palmetto School in Rock Hill School District. However, I believe that most charter schools are formed by a business or an organization at an attempt to satisfy parents because of some concern that they might have in the public school without dealing with the issue of the public school they decide to go out and to form a school. Unfortunately, the students often are the ones who end in a charter school. Parents are promised one special kind of program, and when they get there, they don't have the money to implement that program. They don't have the resources that they have in a regular public school. And sometimes there's been a problem with misuse of funds. And the other thing is what Jenny mentioned, is that there's no certification requirement. There's no election at the school board as it is with our public school. And I think that's a problem.
Thank you.
I think, like Act 388, that charter schools are not going away. They're part of South Carolina's educational infrastructure at this point. I see the state now increasing funding for charter schools this year and working with a superintendent for the charter schools. And really, once that bureaucracy is established, we're faced with a situation of double costs for two separate schools systems. And I think both wind up suffering as a result of it. I'm happy to have the competition. I think competition makes the product always better. And I think we in the school district need to be asking the question, why do we have charter schools? Why are they now being promoted in Columbia? And we should be asking, what is the service that they offer to parents and students that those parents and students believe they're getting from the charter schools, but not from our schools? And there's a lesson for us to learn in there, to be able to essentially sell the product that our public schools offer and to try to be more than competitive with them and convince those parents that their decision to go to a charter school should be revisited and rejoin the public schools.
Okay, Steve and Nina.
because a person decides to put his children in a charter school doesn't mean that that decision is forever. They picked that choice because that was the best option available to them. Options for parents in the education of their children are a good thing. You know, you only get one chance to educate your kid. They're in K-12 for those 12 years, and then it's done. You try to find the best opportunity you can for your child, whether it's private school, if you can afford it, the public school system, if it's good, a charter school, if it's available to you. I agree, they're not going away, and they're not going away because not everybody has a good public school option available to them. So to the extent that we can provide good public schools to our parents, they'll be choosing to put their kids in the public schools. I think that's the challenge for us.
Jane Sharp?
I do not support charter schools. There's an Alcorn article that Jenny mentioned showing that a small percentage of charter schools exceed our performance in public schools. The majority of them are no difference, and even in more of them, over 40% of them perform worse. In January of 2014, I had an op-ed piece published in the Herald in which I compared the outcome of our public charter schools here in South Carolina with our public schools in terms of our outcomes on our 2013 PASS data. In every grade level, except for one, the public schools outperform the public charter schools on both math and reading for our students. That's particularly impressive when you consider the fact that and of the 82 school districts, at least 10 or 12 of them have free and reduced lunches and poverty levels of over 90%. Parents have the right to put their child in any school they want, to homeschool their child, to put them in private schools or whatever. I do not believe they have the right to use public school, public money to sponsor their choices.
Thank you, Marnie.
I think if there's proper oversight of the finances, if they have to publish their expenses, what their salaries are, and you can justify that they need more money, and the legislature wants to do that, I don't have a problem with it.
Okay, Lana Miller?
I'm torn. As a parent, I understand that parents want what's best for their kids in education, and a lot of parents feel like their voice is not being heard, so they're voting with their feet and they're seeking other options. And as taxpayers, I do believe that they have a right to a publicly funded charter school. But at the same time, as a taxpayer, I'm concerned because we're diluting our funds. You know, the idea here is that we are, as a community, is charged with educating our youth for the future. And if we are not focusing all those resources in one place, are we really doing our community a service? So I'm on the fence on this one. I will say this, looking at Rock Hill as a community, no one ever said, I want to move to so-and-so city because their charter schools are so great.
Okay, thank you. All right, we're going to have one more regular question, and then we'll have the closing discussion or closing statements. This question is, what do you see as the most serious issue that Rock Hill Schools currently faces, and what qualifies you to uniquely address the issue? And we'll start with Jane Sharp.
All right. To me, I think the most compelling challenge for us right now is improving the academic achievement of all of our students. We have the capability of doing that. We need the attractiveness of Rock Hill for our families with young people for a school. I was successful in my former school at Bellevue by enabling my teachers to work together, to share ideas, and to work as a team to increase the achievement of our schools and to increase the achievement of all of our kids. The school when I was there had over 70% of the students living in poverty, but yet we came and we still under their current leaders, one of the highest achieving schools. Having successful schools, whether we compete with our two adjoining districts which have much lower poverty levels than we, is not a problem. We can do it. We know how to do it. And I believe that with my experience and so forth, I can help us achieve higher achieving schools here in Rock Hill.
Okay. Jim Biney?
It has to be poverty. We just got a report this week. 61% of our elementary students now are on free reduced lunch. When I came on the board 16 years ago, that was 33%. That's how drastically the poverty has changed in this community. And so that has unique things on funding and how to spend money, and we need to find a way to address that. We need to find a way to make Rock Hill competitive with other districts around, to where when people are looking for places to move, that we have a choice for them in Rock Hill that meets their needs.
I think it's communication. And I'm not talking about communication issues in terms of board members not communicating via the internet, like blogging and tweeting and summarizing information that's readily available on the internet. That's being done. What I'm talking about is a failure of organizational communication. Our school district do not communicate well in either direction. I'm talking downwards, I'm talking upwards. I'm talking to the rest of the community. There is a reason why parents feel like Rock Hill Schools may not be the top choice. It's because of the lack of communication and people are leaving. I think that I'm the best choice because I have a degree in communications. I see the issues. I am a parent. I have three reasons every day why this is important. And currently, not a single one of the current board members actually has a child attending Rock Hill Schools.
So. Jenny Beth. All of these issues are important. The one I'm going to focus on is board leadership. We've worked, when I first got on the board, we didn't have much training. We've worked hard on training. We had 3.5 hours of training yesterday to provide some leadership, to provide some new policies, to review policies, make sure that people are following policies, so that when we do hear from the community and put that kind of thing in policy, everybody understands it, everybody follows it. As I think was mentioned earlier, we 2 years ago set some district goals of academics, teacher training, and communication. I would add to that finance. We've worked hard to make all that public. We go out knocking on doors and asking questions, but we do need to communicate that more. And I think our board leadership, I'd like to continue to work on that because I think we're making progress.
Hey, Sarah Harper.
There are several issues that I think are critical issues, but I think one of the most critical issues at this point is funding. There's a saying that goes, it takes a village to raise a child. And in fact, it does take a village to raise a child, and it takes a village to educate a child. None of us want to see any kind of taxes increase so that we have more taxes flowing into the district. What we do want to do is to have our legislatures take a look at the way schools are funded today and see if there can't be some kind of educational reform in terms of funding that will equalize and will change our district funding so that, in fact, we are having more funds coming into the district. The state has never funded education to the level that it should be funded. And I think that it's time that we talk with our legislators to see what we can do to increase the funding coming into our district.
Thank you. I think there are three primary areas. First one, it has to do with funding. I have experience working with legislative folks on writing legislation and doing markups so that you maximize the benefit of legislation before it shows up in the mailbox at our office. I'm accustomed to budget management. I know that there's only two parts to a budget, and that's your income and expense. And because of my work in the private sector, I have made and am prepared to make the hard decisions either on either side of the ledger necessary to balance. Parental involvement is the second item. I believe that in order for us to get more, school district has to take on a much more aggressive marketing approach to selling the many services that we have and the good products and our excellent teachers with our parents to assuage concerns that they have about education. And finally, I think education is in a dynamic period of change right now, with competition from homeschools, virtual schools, charter schools, all new forms of schools. And we have to adjust to this new competitive environment and make certain that we are able to sell the story we have and that we have a story that people want to buy.
Okay, Steve
Anita. I think I'll disagree completely. I don't think it takes a village to raise a child. I think it takes a parent to raise a child. Ever-increasing amounts of funding and it, thrown at education over the last 40 years have been shown to result in exactly flat outcomes in math, reading, science scores. The most challenging problem facing our school district is parental involvement. We need to get parents more engaged in the education of their kids, take more responsibility for that education. And I think the reason I'm more qualified to lead that charge is because, as I've said many times, I have those five kids in the school system. I know exactly the challenges that they're facing, time-wise, material-wise, making sure that their kids are ready to learn and in the class every day.
Okay, thank you. We're now going to go to the closing statement portion because we're about out of time. So I will call your names in random order, and you'll have 1 minute to give a closing statement. Okay? Jim Viney.
Thank you for coming, and thanks to Winston. I really enjoyed how this forum was run. We've talked about a lot of issues, but school districts are more than what's been talked about. Because of our poverty levels, we're one of the largest social service providers in the county. And because of that, we have a national award, or a national recognized back-to-back program. We do very well in recycling. The top three schools in the state in recycling are Rock Hill schools. In fact, 19 of the top 20 are from Rock Hill. We generate $300,000 in revenue for our recycling program that goes into the budget. We have the highest percentage of Energy Star schools in the state, and that has saved lots of money over the years. We have more choice than the other district in the upstate. Five of the last 6 years, we've had a finalist in the State Teacher of the Year competition, and twice we've had State Teacher of the Year. The level of teaching in our district is as high as anywhere in the state. No community in the state can make this big. Thank you.
Steve DeNino.
I'm going to go in a little different direction here. I wanted to point out that Monday is the 50th anniversary of Reagan's Time for Choosing speech. You might recall this line from that. This is the issue. Whether we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves. So why do I bring this up? Because local elections are the American ideal. Ordinary people serving their neighbors. I reject the premise that experts can run things just as they see fit. And I believe that what we need right now more than anything is old-fashioned common sense, not more experts. I'm a dad who's always been passionately involved in my kids' lives, and my goal is to use that passion to help all of Rock Hill's kids. If you're uneasy with the direction of your children's education, then it follows that we need new ideas on the board. For seat four, I'm the only parent with kids in the schools, and I ask for your vote. Thank you.
Okay, Jenny Moe.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm a 20-year resident of Rock Hill. My husband and I have raised our daughter in the Rock Hill schools. I'm a former business owner, and I understand those finances. I work in a church every day where we spend all our time communicating and collaborating, which is exactly what you have to do on the board to get anything done. I've actively pushed to hire a superintendent who will focus on academics, and she does. And I seek ideas from my constituents. I listen, and I've returned every phone call or contact I've had if they've given me information to do so. I'm asking for your vote so I can continue my work on communications and finance and support our superintendent as she works on academics and teacher training.
Thank you. Helena Miller.
Yes. The priority for the school district really is to put the child first. And if we are putting the child first, maybe we ought to talk to the primary advocate for those children, namely the parents. Currently, we need to balance the board. We need parental representation. What do I bring to the table? I got a degree in communications. I have been currently in the school district. My youngest one just started kindergarten. I'm in this for the long haul. And I got time. I'm a stay-at-home mom. Rock Hill Schools take care of my children between 7:40 or so and 3 p.m. I think we need to realize that being a board member is more than just two meetings a day or a month. It's a time commitment. I'm ready to do that, and I am enthusiastic. I think we can do a great job in turning this around. So please support me and put a parent on the board on November 4th.
Okay, Rick Lee.
Sorry.
Thank you to the Winthrop Political Science Department for conducting this forum. In closing, I want to highlight that I have a long record of commitment to the Rock Hill Schools, having served as president of two PTOs and leading a team of parents to win the prestigious Governor's Award of Excellence. As a fundraiser at Sullivan Middle School, we raised $65,000 for school improvements and teacher stipends. I was an active participant with the wrestling programs at Sullivan and Rock Hill High. My wife and I supported academic boosters and IB programs, as well as teachers as we participated in our children's education. I'm the only candidate who has four children who have gone through the entire cycle of education with the Rock Hill Schools. Having had direct contact with some 90 teachers, I understand the challenges our students face. I have a wife who is a teacher and have heard on many days about the issues our teachers face. I'm in a unique position because of my experience in finance, long-term planning, operations, and technology in the global market to help the school board find solutions to the challenges we face in the coming years. Thank you. Please vote November 4th.
Okay, Sarah Harper.
Thank you, and again, thank you to Winthrop and the Political Science Department for bringing this group together. I'm running for the board because I believe in the next 4 years, the board is going to have to make some very critical decisions. And you've heard tonight about, well, we need to have parents on the board. Well, unfortunately, I don't have young children, but I have three children. My husband and I have three children, and we have 10 grandchildren. So you can see that my past has been very involved in the education process. My concern for the students, school district, are the same as my concerns are for my grandchildren who are in other states. Because of my background in a bachelor's degree, and I have a master's degree, and I also have a doctorate in educational leadership, I believe that qualifies me as the best leader and the best person for the board. And I urge you to vote for an educator on the board on November the 4th. Thank you for your support.
Jane Sharp.
One of the things I'm most proud about in being on the board is that we are a nonpartisan group. We all may have our political allegiances, but it does not affect our total focus on educating children. We don't need conservative schools. We don't need liberal schools. We need excellent schools. We need successful schools where students and communities thrive. If you want a district to improve student achievement so that young families will buy houses and move here for their home and where to raise their children, then you will vote for me. If you want small businesses, large businesses that want to locate here because of the viability and the excellence in our schools, you will vote for me. I have raised the achievement of one of our highest poverty schools. It is still among our highest achieving schools. If you want an active board member who respects and supports all of our teachers and our administrators, but also holds all of us accountable for increasing our district's performance, then you will vote for me.
Okay, thank you. I think we need to thank all of our candidates. I want to thank all the candidates and also all of you for coming. It's always wonderful to see. As a mom of two kids in the district, it's always great to see people supporting the school. So thank you for coming out tonight. Hope everybody learned a little more. Have a great night.
I don't know how long it lasted because it winked out. I did get a video if you want it.
That'll be a shirt. So
okay, this is a lot quicker
there.
Actually, to do the audio. It really wasn't interesting in the video, to be honest.
No, it was.
No, the video.
You know, but yeah, I'll just.